tonight's event and this series, which will take place this Wednesday and the next two Wednesdays. It's been a long time coming, but she is rather persistent. And while she didn't succeed in the calendar year Tovshin Ayin Gimel, but she did succeed in the calendar year Tovshin Ayin Dalet. So persistence does pay off. We have a principle in the halacha which states that Eirecha Neman Bisurim, that when it comes to matters of what's kosher, what's not kosher, one witness suffices. When it comes to financial dealings, moral offenses, we have to have two witnesses. So where do we get the notion that Eirecha is Neman Bisurim? That for Easter, one eight suffices. And Rashi tells us this stems from a very simple fact. All of us eat in our homes. Right? We don't have too much gichim sitting in a home from dawn until dusk to see that everything is appropriate. We place our hands, our homes, in the hands of our wives, and they take care of the house. And we come home, how do we know the food is kosher? How do we know it's not basar v'challah? Because our wives tell us that that's the way it is. And that's so axiomatic in Jewish life, from the dawn of Jewish history, from Moshe Rabbeinu and on, that we can build a halachic principle, Echad Neman Visra, that one witness suffices to tell me what's kosher and what's non-kosher. That's the significance that women have had in our enterprise in almost 3,500 years approximately from Moshe Rabbeinu until now. So tonight's share is really, I'm coming full cycle, I have to tell you. When I started to deliver Shiurim in Hilchos Shavuos many, many years ago, and at that time I was teaching 12th graders. So they said to me, Rebbe, what are you coming to tell us about Bishul, cooking? I said, that's our mother's problem. What does it have to do with us? So I convinced them that it had to do with them. And after part of the term came by, he used to say, Rebbe, don't tell us anymore. We're finding out too many things that we're doing wrong that we didn't anticipate. So give us a favor, don't tell us anymore. So now I come to the source, because this is the forum of those that actually bear the responsibility, the ones that really know what's going on, the ones that see that it's carried out properly. So this is the right place to be. So it's been a long time in coming that I come to this forum. But this is really the place where it begins. Now I want to address matters of the blech and bishul cooking on Shabbos. Before we go further, everyone please close your cell phones. I guarantee you can survive for 1 hour. I take responsibility for it with the cell phones put on silent. Now, we learn in two ways. We learn, first and foremost, the primary learning in life is experiential. We grow up in a Jewish home and things take place around us. I once asked a frum tailor, a very elderly gentleman, I asked him, when did you learn to be a tailor? He says, Rabbi, I never learned to be a tailor. He says, I grew up in a family of tailors and I just assimilated being a tailor and I was naturally a tailor. He's a very good tailor. But that's how I became a tailor. My father was a tailor, my uncle was a tailor, we had a tailoring business in the family. That's what I grew up with. That's what I breathed and lived, and I naturally became a tailor. That's how we assimilate, really, most of our knowledge. We grow up. We didn't stop to learn that we don't put the lights on Shabbos and not. Our mothers didn't give us an exam and give us a mark and a prize, paste a smiley on it because we got a good mark on the test. Just naturally, we observed as we grew up that that's the way Jews act. Things we do, things we don't do, that's our primary means of learning. And we must supplement that, however, with formal learning too. And the reason for that is that that which we learn by experience gives us the broad parameters. All the fine nuances, the fine details are very hard to catch just by observation. So that's what we have to have more formal learning for. And more formal learning can never really take the place of experience. Because everything that we learn in a formal sense, if it doesn't have the practical interface with experience, we don't really know what it means. we integrate things into a practical experience. We come together for a little bit of a formal look at things that we do all the time, so that the finer details shouldn't be lost on us. And sometimes we lose the details just because in life we don't have every experience. We just don't see everything that takes place. When I entered Yeshiva Gdola, I was about 20 years old. I entered earlier, but thinking back to the time when I was about 19, 20 years old, I was rather astounded to learn that fellows that I went to Yeshiva with, and they all came pretty much from birth families, whose fathers, whose parents were good, upstanding, you know, observant Jews. Most of them, their parents had never heard of Tfilas Kelim. And this was a common discussion among my friends, what to do about this problem. If their parents went away for Shabbos, they came with a station wagon, loaded everything up, went to the mikveh and brought it back. Because not only didn't their parents know about it, their parents would have considered it so outlandish, they wouldn't have been able to convince them that they're supposed to do it. I personally happened to be that I did know about it, for one reason, that I once went with my father to table a set of glasses in Jamaica Bay. So I remembered, you know, I knew it's probably the only time that I ever saw Tfilas Kelim growing, but I saw it. And I realized that the people of my parents' generation, they grew up in the Depression years, their parents didn't go to Macy's every week to buy a new set of glasses and a new set of pots. And consequently, this running to the mikveh with Kelim just didn't happen around them. And if it did happen, it happened out of sight. They just didn't see it happen. So they just were totally unaware. It never was off the radar. So sometimes, even in the things that we do experience, but particular aspects are off the radar. We just didn't catch them. So we need to go back and formally review that which we do. So tonight I want to talk about the fact that why in the world do we have a blech? You know, I know we have pots and pans in our kitchens, all types of, you know, food processors, mixers. And you know, you go to Macy's or whatever, Bed Bath & Beyond, they sell all of these, no shortage of them. But I never saw a blech in Bed Bath & Beyond yet, you know? Never saw it advertised. So, why do we have this? What do we need this for? The rest of the world seems to live comfortably without it. Now, the first thing I want to tell you is it really does not directly have to do, at least 50% of why we have it certainly has nothing to do directly with cooking. Indirectly, yes. But when we talk about the malach of bishul, bishul is one of the activities which is prohibited on Shabbos. And as in all activities which are prohibited on Shabbos, they trace back to those activities which were done in the construction of the Mishkan. In the construction of the Mishkan, they had to dye the coverings, which were the roof of the Mishkan. And they used natural dyes. They didn't have synthetic dyes. So what are natural dyes? You take fruits and vegetables, you boil them in water until the color leaches out, and then you have your dye. So that's how they made the dyes in the Mishkan, by taking whatever fruits, vegetables, berries they were going to use, and you boil them and boil them and boil them until the color leaches out and you have dye. So we had bishul in the construction of the Mishkan. But that's not really the primary focus, at least the 50% of the story of the blech. The focus is in an entirely different area. Now, to be a little bit more clear, first I have to disabuse you of a notion that many people believe to be true, and perhaps it's good that they think that it's true, but it's really not true. And that is, you know, people are under the impression that somehow that there's something wrong with things cooking on Shabbos. You know, that I have to cook before Shabbos. If I put up something up and it cooks on Shabbos, somehow that's a contravention of the halacha. Now, if we stop to think about it, we'll realize ourselves that it couldn't possibly be true. Did we all of us light Neir Shabbos on Friday night? Did the candles continue to burn on Shabbos? Does anyone consider ourselves to be a Mechal Shabbos? No. So we know we're allowed to put all types of processes in motion before Shabbos, and as long as we don't have anything to do with them actively on Shabbos, it's fine. So in reality, if I put the process of cooking in motion before Shabbos, and I'm hands off on Shabbos, then I could not conceivably violate the Malach of Bishul. So this is, now, So we're going to take a step back, and we'll start the story from the beginning. Now it happens to be, I said, it's a good thing that people believe that way, because as we're going to find out in this series, there's a very good reason, in fact, to make sure that you don't cook things on Shabbos. But not actually for the reason that we think, for a different reason. So let's start off. Why do we have a blech in the first place? Now, one thing that I don't envy anyone sitting here, if your family comes home from shul Friday night, let's, I don't know, nowadays it's somewhere 7 o'clock or so, you come home from shul, and you tell them, well, listen, I hate to break it to you, but the food's not ready, so go learn for 2 hours in the Beis Medrash and then come back, and then we're going to eat. I don't want to be in your shoes. It will not be very pleasant. You know, I know myself, Friday is a day that I barely eat. Just I tend to be busy Friday, and I don't have time to eat. So if I ate something, a little something in the morning, that's oftentimes as much as I can expect to have for the whole day. And until I come home from shul, I don't manage to eat most of the year a second time. So by the time I come home from shul, it's not a time that I'm anxious to wait another 2 hours to eat. So, now, Chazal were equally concerned about this problem. What happens if you put up the food too late there on Shabbos, and now it's starting, the clock is ticking, and you hear the footsteps, you know, coming from shul, and things are not ready yet. So the problem is that under pressure and stress, we tend to be impulsive. Now, the human being ultimately should think first and act second. You know, how did the carpenters put it? The carpenter say the following, measure twice and saw once. But usually in life, this is what happens the other way. First we act, and after we act, then we start to think, was that really the smartest thing to do? And that's when we're under stress. So Chazal were concerned that if the food would not be ready at an appropriate time for Shabbos, we may impulsively just reach out and adjust the flame upward, and afterwards stop to think about it and realize, hey, that wasn't what I was supposed to do. This is Friday night now. But therefore, they had to intervene in some fashion to make sure that we didn't wind up in this situation. So to that end, they articulated the following. Now, I believe, just correct me, please, if I'm wrong, do I have any people of the Sephardic tradition here? I don't think so. Okay, so then I'll give the share of the purely according to the Ashkenazi halacha. I do have, usually, when I taught this in school, I invariably had Sephardi Talmidim too. So I had to address where their shittas are different, where their approach is different than ours, which stems back to really to the Gemara, to the Rishonim. Let's follow Ashkenazi practice for our purposes. And Ashkenazi practice says the following, that when am I likely to get in trouble on Friday night? It's assuming that if the food is raw, I'm not too likely to get in trouble because no matter what I'm going to do, we're not eating tonight, this food. So you write it off. When you write off, there's stress-free in life. When you know you lost, there's no stress at all. So if it's something that I know cannot conceivably be ready tonight because it's raw when Shabbos actually begins, I put it on the blech 2 seconds before Shabbos, it's absolutely raw, I wouldn't have a problem. The problem is if it already started to cook and it's not yet edible because it's not cooked yet. That's where we can get in trouble. Therefore, a little bit of extra help will get me across the finish line in due time. Now, so Chazal said the following, we'll come back to this, why this is this way, but anything which is between, it started to cook already and it's not yet half cooked, that's the problem area. And we don't want food on the fire as Shabbos begins that started to cook and didn't yet reach half cooked yet. That's the problem area. Now, what's the significance of half cooked? Half cooked, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, there was a fellow whose name really is lost in history, in my opinion. We don't really know him. There was a thief. And in the life of thieves, you tend to be on the lam. The sheriff and his deputies are after you constantly. So this is not a very pleasant thing. Now, one of the most dangerous activities you do every day is to cook your food. Because both you have to sit still, and you have a plume of smoke rising that marks your position. And this is could be very, very dangerous to your further existence in this career. So there was a fellow who was referred to as Bar Dusoy, and I believe Bar Dusoy was not his name, as we'll see in a moment, but he was very, very concerned that he shouldn't be captured. So he used to cook his food to the absolute minimum, is at the rarest possible degree that it was edible as a cooked food. He wolfed it down, and he took off again, so in case somebody spotted him, by the time they came where he was, he faded into the night. And he's called Bar Dusoy. An animal is considered Doras. It takes something raw and it just rips it apart. So I believe that's why he was called his name. Chazal didn't tell us who this thief was. But his actions, he was Bar Dusoy. He was the guy that ate the very rare food, like almost animal-like in the way he ate. So that's considered in the halacha to be one level of being cooked. And something, at least in a pinch, a person would eat food that's cooked to that degree. Is that considered the final, fully cooked or not? That's a very interesting question. And our Rishonim debated that question. There are some that say that once it reached the point that it's rare, and it's edible as a rare food, that it's considered cooked. And everything beyond that is not cooking. Others say that cooking is as long as it's getting softer, until it's soft through and through, or an egg that's making a hard egg till it's hard all the way through. That's what constitutes bishul. And this is an unsettled question. We don't have an absolute answer to it. And therefore, on Shabbos, we are concerned that from half, the rest of the way is still considered bishul. Now, we have the same issue. This is an important issue which comes up in other spheres as well. We have in terms of bishul akum. If we have a non-Jew that starts to cook something in our kitchen, till what point can we save the day? So according to the Mechaber, you can save the day until it's half-cooked or third-cooked. But once it's, let's say, half-cooked, once it's half-cooked, finished. It's all over. That if the non-Jew cooked it till half-cooked, then it certainly there's nothing more I can do already, and the food is prohibited because of bishul akum. The Ramah comes along, and this which is Ashkenazic practice, and the Ramah says, yet if I came along and discovered this, and I took it off the fire and put it back on the fire, so the second half of the cooking was done by me, it's permissible. So we have still, in other words, this question of what happens from a half to a whole reflects itself in varied areas of the halacha. But what we're concerned about is in between more than zero and less than a half is a place that I could be successful by pushing it. And therefore, Chazal did not want us to wind up in that situation. So what did they do? They enacted an issue which we call shihiyah. Shihiyah means to allow something to stay on the fire as Shabbos begins. So how do we leave things on the fire as Shabbos begins? Really in two different ways. If we're Ashkenazim, if it's more than half cooked when Shabbos begins, we could leave it on the fire. And I'm telling this to you not because I intend that you should do this, but life does not always present itself in the fashion that we want. The Chabina Rav, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, was a godel from Galicia. He died about 1965. He survived the Holocaust in Siberia, and he and the Chazon Ish were the two greatest poskim in the post-war era in Eretz Yisrael. So he implored his Talmidim, he said, when you learn the Shulchan Aruch, he says, I don't want you to skip anything. Learn every single thing in the Shulchan Aruch, even the things which seem way out and have nothing to do with your life. He said, I never envisioned that in my life, I lived in Galicia. I didn't plan to live in Siberia, but I wound up for an extended period of my life in Siberia. The circumstances under which I lived were not ones that I ever imagined that I would live under. And how to halachically accommodate myself to the situation, I was able to do because I learned all the strange things. I didn't learn only the normal things. All the strange types of situations I also studied. So when they arose in my life, I knew what to do about them. You know, it's nice to say we're always going to be at home, and we have the blech, and we're going to start, and Shabbos starts calmly, and I'm going to do Hadlokas Neiris, and I'll sit down and say Tillum, and my life is very, you know. And hopefully, most of the time, it is that way. But one of the activities that I have, it's going to soon start after this Shabbos, but one of my Friday afternoon activities on a regular basis is answering the phone about an hour before Shabbos by people that are stranded in all types of traffic and all types of circumstances and have no idea where they're going to wind up on Shabbos, if they're going to make it back on time or not. And this is what I spend sometimes the last hour before Shabbos directing such people what they should do and how they should, you know, celebrate Shabbos. And when they should get out of the car, switch to a cab, go to a hotel, whatever. This is an ongoing activity throughout the winter months in my house. So, you know, sometimes we may arrive at a situation that we wound up in a hotel for Shabbos. I wasn't in a motel. I wasn't planning to be there. I was planning to be somewhere else. There was a huge accident. There was a storm. Whatever it may be. I got a flat tire along the way. And I wound up someplace where I didn't intend to be. Now, I do have to know the halacha in that case too. So if the food is half cooked, I don't need to worry about a blech. I need to worry about other things, but about a blech, I don't need to worry. So even if I don't have a blech, I can get by. Now you can make a temporary blech, happens to be, if you take a piece of aluminum foil and cover the fire with it, that's good for a temporary blech. For the Shabbos, it'll do. But if you don't even have that, if the food is half cooked, you can leave it on the fire and have hot food that Shabbos. So you need to know what happens if life doesn't work out exactly the way we want. So that's why I discussed this. Now, what do we do in the normal situation? Now, the normal situation, we should endeavor to have it fully cooked before Shabbos. If it's not for some reason, sometimes, again, we get home later than we intended to, for reasons beyond our control. Sometimes we stayed a little bit too long in business. Sometimes the train didn't work properly. You know, I've seen, listen, in the years, I'm almost, it's approaching 30 years that I'm here in Kew Garden Hills. And I still have a vision driving one Friday night, Lichtbenchen time, to shul. And on one of the streets in which I passed, I saw Nebuch, I felt sorry, bad for her. A woman was coming home from work. And there she was with her purse, fumbling with her keys at the door. You know, it was Lichtbenchen time already. And obviously she did not intend to arrive home at that hour. But whatever happened, happened. Something happened. And that's when she came home. So these things do happen. So we have to be prepared. Now, what did Chazal legislate if the food is not fully cooked? Or not half cooked, I should say. So we have to start off. Let me start off to tell you what they did in the technology with which they used. Remember, they used fireplaces, they used solid fuels. So let's start with that, and then we'll extrapolate to our situation. So in their situation, they said one should do one of two things. Either take the coals and remove them from the oven altogether. There's a grate, and normally in a fire in an oven, and you can push all the coals over that grate and they fall out of the oven. The heat stays for quite a long time. They're designed in such fashion that the roof is high inside and the door is low, so it maintains its heat. But I've changed the normal way that I use this stove. The second is that I should take ash and put ash over the coals or the wood that's in the fire. Those are the two methods that Chazal legislated for dealing with this problem on Shabbos. The theory behind it, we have two types of explanations. They're similar, but there are significant differences. Either the simplest is the way Tosfos tells it to us, that this is when I look at the stove Friday night and I may impulsively want to adjust the fire, something tells me that this is Shabbos. This is not the way this thing normally looks. The coals have disappeared. There's only little shards of the coals that remain behind. There's ash on top of the coals. This is not normal. The fact that it's not normal screams at me that it's Shabbos and I should stop in my tracks. Rashi went even a step further than that, and Rashi said that the reason that it works is because it cools the oven down somewhat. And sort of now I'm in the ironic situation. I just cooled the oven down before Shabbos, and now I'm going to look at this oven. You know, why am I trying to make the oven warm again? Because I just made it cool. The fact that I just made it cool, the irony of it, will catch my attention and cause me not to adjust the flames on Shabbos. Now this is important, the source is important, because I always tell my Talmidim, listen, you know, why should we be 19th century Jews? I want to do a blech, the 21st century version. So what I tell them, maybe they'll tell me the 20th century version, I want to take a big ball like they use in the dance halls, put it over the oven, and have the strobe lights go on it. And when you walk in, the lights are going to be flashing all over the kitchen. You'll walk in there on Shabbos and all the lights are flashing. You know, you'll plug it in on your computer, it'll know what every Lichtbenchen is, it'll turn on exactly the right time. 3 a.m, it'll go off. And this only takes place on Shabbos. So when you see the lights, you see all over the house, the lights are flashing in the kitchen off this wall, you know it's Shabbos. There can't be a better reminder than it's Shabbos. So I want to make, this is going to be the new blech. So it catches my fancy, but it's not halachically acceptable. Why? It might remind me. It might even be a better reminder of that which we do. But we are limited in the halacha to the fixes that Chazal gave us. Chazal legislated how we have to fix the problem of using the fire on Shabbos. And it is not subject to us to legislate anew that which we think is going to serve us better. So how do we actually, in our terms, fulfill the din of the blech on Shabbos? So we can't actually remove the coals. If we close the fire, the whole thing would get cold. So that wouldn't work. We can't use that in our situation. You know, if you ever go to a matzah baker and you'll see the oven, you'll see how it's designed, that it maintains its heat for a very long time, even if you wouldn't actually have wooden coal in it. So the one method that we can follow is kotum. Kotum is that we cover the fire. So that's what we do with our blech, is we cover the fire. And that follows the takana of Chazal, that they used to cover the coals or the wood with ash. So we use a metal sheet. Whatever it is, I don't want to go into, not, this is not the forum to go into all the halachic nuances that are involved in the pulim of the Chazal Ish and Ramesh Ephraim. That's not for this forum. But how exactly, if it is an exact fit, it's not an exact fit, there's some question about it. But that's our practice, be that as it may. That's the way we conduct ourselves. So then on Friday night, as we approach the oven, you know, Melochus, Chazal have a very interesting expression. Chazal tell us that even Safilu Sefer Torah Shebehechel, even the Sefer Torah and the Aron Kodesh, also needs mazel. And all the life, with everything that you have going for you, you can have all the brochas in the world, every advantage and every talent in the world, but you need a little bit of mazel too. To whatever you do, you need a little bit of mazel. We have a say, you have an Aron Kodesh, you can have 25, 30 Sifrei Torah inside. Which are the ones that are used regularly on Shabbos? 3, 4, 5. You need mazel for whatever reason that somehow you made it to the A-list. You know, otherwise you're lucky to take you out on Rosh Chodesh, one they take out once a year on Pesach, one they use, you know, on Simchas Torah. 5 of them they use the whole year. I feel the Sefer Torah Shebehechel also needs a little bit of mazel. Halachas need mazel too. Bishul has a mazel because of all the fuss that we made with the blech on Shabbos. Anyone that's ever lived among the Jews knows that you don't cook on Shabbos. I can take you even to ask with among non-Jews in glatt kosher health-related facilities, people that have never observed the Jewish religion in any direct connection. They'll all tell you that they know cooking is something that is different on Shabbos, you know. It's something that we don't do. What exactly? They don't know the details, but they know cooking is some special activity on Shabbos. The fuss about the blech and keeping the food on, everybody knows about Bishul. Does everybody know about Bor? Lav bedafka. You know, Baruch Hashem, our educational institutions have worked overtime in the last 40, 50 years, and Baruch Hashem, probably most of my listeners know what Bor is for that reason. I was once present in my childhood. I came someplace with a yid, that was a very big Talmud, great Talmud Chacham, and we came to a house together of a very observant family, very observant, and they were using a grinder on Shabbos. So this Talmud Chacham told them that, listen, this is one of the things you can't do on Shabbos, one of the Melechus Shabbos. And the people were very serious-minded people, so that's it, they stopped, and that's it, they swore it off, they never used it again in their life. But somehow, Teuchen just never made it on their list of the melachos, of the things you don't do on Shabbos. Just never registered. So Bishul is very high profile, because at a blech we make a big fuss about it, so everybody knows that you can't do Bishul on Shabbos. Now, the question is, do we have to actually cover the knobs or not? Or is it enough that we cover the fire or the heat source itself? Now, before... So the question, first of all, we have to recognize the difference in the technologies, what they had and what we have, and what the implications of that are. When you have a barbecue, that's what we're most common in Kew Garden Hills, if you have a charcoal barbecue, so all the action is in one place. You have the fire. If you want to get it going faster, you take something, you stir it up to add more oxygen to the mix, and the flame gets higher. But it's all in one place. Everything centers around the fire. That's where the fire burns. That's where you control the fire. So obviously that's where you have to make some distinction between the weekday use of the fire and the Shabbos use of the fire. We created in our type of fuels with the gas range a very unique creature. And now we have the fire in one place and the controls in a very different place. So we broke those two apart in our technology. So how do you deal with that? You know, they had such things in oil lamps, true, but for cooking they didn't have such technology. But we use this for cooking too. So which is the principal factor, where the fire is or where the handles are? Now, if we said the issue was that we're going to adjust the flames upward, so it would ought to be where the handles are, because you can't adjust the flames upward with the fire. So we do have split opinion on this subject. When Moshe Feinstein Zatzal said that the fire is the principal place. Since it's true, if we would reconvene the Chachmei Hashas today, and they would have to legislate, they undoubtedly would legislate that we should cover the handles, because that's where the action is. But when they legislated, there was no such dichotomy, and therefore they legislated to cover the fire. So that's what the halacha remains. So it's a good idea if you cover the handles too. Right? There are others that learn about Kotler that learn that the handles are the principal issue. So if you do both, certainly you're in good shape. You know, I would think that the blech is the primary one, and the iron are the handles. It's a good addition if you do it. So now we have to consider what are the parameters of this. So we're concerned, the issue is that the blech is to remind me not to adjust the flame. So I told you at the beginning, it's not directly oriented to Bishul, right? The use of fire on Shabbos is a different malocha. Le'savaro eish b'chol mosh v'seichem b'yom ha-Shabbos. Havor, not Bishul. It's oriented towards Havor, the use and the manipulation of flame. That's what we were concerned with. Yeah, I will manipulate it for the purpose of Bishul, but it wasn't the Bishul which was the target. The target here was adjusting the flame, the Havor. That was the target. Now, the consequence of that is that there are certain times when we don't have an issue of needing a blech altogether. And for example, let's say we have the type of equipment, especially electrical equipment, that has only an on setting and an off setting. That's it. There are no varied heats. You know, today you have a crock pot that has at least three on off and three heat settings. So that's certainly back in the same situation that we were with any other fire that we may adjust it. But let's say I take, for example, an electric coffee maker. You put it on or you put it off. There are no adjustments along the way. So in that situation, the poskim have agreed that, or a hot plate, which may have only one setting. You plug it in and it's on. You unplug it, it's off. There are no heat settings. So the poskim agree that in such a situation, for this purpose, this is one of the two purposes of the blech, you do not need a blech. Now, we'll soon see what we have to be careful about. Now, number two, let's say I have something which has adjustable heat, but it's, let's say take a crock pot, for example. The heat is adjustable, but none of us have ever seen the flame, the red-hot coils of the crock pot. They're buried inside the equipment itself. So does that constitute kotum, that just as the blech is covering the fire here, the fire is always covered? I never see it. So the answer to Chofetz Chaim Zatzal writes, and I saw also, I was looking about a week ago, a sefer of Pesukim or Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal also writes, they both take the same stance, that the essence of the blech, as I said before, is that it differentiates that which we do on Shabbos from that which we do on the weekday. If I look at it on Shabbos and it doesn't look different than it looked in the weekday, then I didn't fulfill the din. So therefore the crackpot, despite the fact that the coils are always covered, but that's not considered a blech, because that's the conventional means of using it. So, if you put out, for this purposes, there's another reason you need it, for the purposes of that which we're discussing now, of leaving things on, not fully cooked before Shabbos begins. So one can make a blech for a crackpot, a two-piece crackpot, that is, by lining the entire insert, the bottom section that has the heat, lining it fully with aluminum foil, And seeing that the aluminum foil is that much that even when you put the insert in, you still see the aluminum foil sticking out from the seam. So therefore, that constitutes a blech. I've covered the heat source, and as I approach the device on Shabbos, I see, in fact, that there is a blech. I see the foil sticking out. That suffices to fulfill the din of the blech. Now, if the situation is that I have fulfilled the din of the blech, and I'm therefore theoretically allowed to leave food on the fire, which is not fully cooked, so should I do that or not on Shabbos? So in this city, in my early years, there are two super ga'inim in this city. One that most of us are familiar with, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, and one who was nifter already 40 years ago, and most of us are not so familiar with, and that's Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. These were two super poskim. They were world-class poskim. Rabbanim all over the world turned to them with the most complex shailos. They both lived in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. They had an awesome respect for each other. And they were the handful of leading Rabbanim in the entire world on the planet. And Rav Henkin, in one of his forum, writes that we should be particular that the food should be fully cooked by the time Shabbos begins. And for what reason? He says, it's our practice that we don't leave on a lot of fires on Shabbos. We don't want the house to get too hot, whatever all the other reasons that we have are. Now, consequently, what happens is, so we have the things we're going to use right away on Friday night are on the fire, and the other things are further from the fire. And as we take things off, everything else, we start moving in closer and closer. Now, I always told my Talmidim, I want to tell you how you can violate Bishul cooking the easy way. But the easy way to be Mechal Shabbos with Bishul, the easiest way in the world. So the easiest way in the world, you come on Friday night, and you're curious, you want to know what your mother made for Shabbos. So you go into the kitchen, you pick up the pots, you look inside, and you cover all of them again. If there's anything which was not fully cooked, and you open the pot and you close the pot, you were just Mechal Shabbos. Why? Because Bishul is not only the fact that I put something on the fire, but if I cause something to cook faster than it otherwise would have cooked, once I open the pot, it's not going to be as hot anymore. Now that I reclose the pot, I'm making it hotter again. So if I intensify the heat, and thereby the food will cook faster on Shabbos, that's Chilul Shabbos. So I always told them, this is the easy way. They got frightened from this. You know, come and open up and look at the pots, open them, close them. And this is equally true if I take something from a place on the blech that may be hot and push it to a hotter place on the blech. If the food is not fully cooked, I will violate Bishul. So Rav Henkin Zatzal wrote that for this reason, that we should be careful that the food be fully cooked before Shabbos. So that since we tend to move things around on the blech on Shabbos, Friday night, therefore, if everything's fully cooked, then I can move it from one place to where I can move it to a hotter spot on the blech too, and I won't violate Bishul. But if it's not fully cooked and I do it, I'm going to be Mechal Shabbos. So this was a perspective of a great Goyin. I always tell my Talmidim that there are two ways to live in this world. Great Goyinim, they know the entire Torah, they have their wits about them, they can do all types of things that the rest of us can't do, because they know exactly what they're supposed to do. They're very focused, they don't lose themselves, and they could do all types of things they know exactly how to do. Most of the rest of us are wise that we play it close to the vest. That we do things in a simple, straightforward fashion, that even if we have lapses, that we're not, the lapses are not going to be Chilul Shabbos. So this was from Henkin's suggestion that we cook the food fully before Shabbos begins. Now this is relevant in another situation that we talked about. Let's say I want to take the water and put it into an electric coffee maker, not just to make hot water, right before Shabbos. Should I do this or not? Now, assuming that it only has an on-off switch, so we said in terms of the halacha that we just talked about, it's permissible, because you can't adjust the heat upward. It takes as long as it takes. So from that standpoint, it's mutter. But Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal said that we shouldn't do it. Why shouldn't we do it? He says, because what happens if I decide to take out a cup of water before it's hot, fully hot? the rest of the water is going to cook faster now, and I'll actually be mechallel Shabbos. So really, we should avoid the situation. If we wind up in a situation that I can't avoid the situation, besides late and I need to have hot water for Shabbos, so fill it up and put a cup over the handle and write "Don't touch." So if anyone comes to take the water out, they'll realize, "Osiga bayod, don't touch, tread lightly here," and then we won't actually come to a situation of Chilul Shabbos. Yeah. Sometimes, like I said, you know, pencils come with erasers. Life is not always lived under the most ideal of circumstances. And if sometimes we have to put up food right before Shabbos. I'm getting to the short time of the year again. I'm thinking back a long, long time ago when I lived still in Kew Gardens. And there was a Friday that the Lichbenchim was around 4:10 in the year, 4:10, 4:12, one of those early Fridays. And well, in those years, the family was small. You know, we had a couple of some little children, but we didn't have a big family yet. And we're ready for Shabbos. I davened mincha already. And it's 4:20, 10 minutes before Shkia, and there's a knock on the door. I was not expecting anyone, but there's a knock on the door. I open up the door, and standing at the door is one of my relatives. They were in transit from London to New York. The plane was delayed, and they realized they're going to get in at the last minute, and they could not make it home to the neighborhood in which they lived. So they had no just carry-ons. They arranged, they raced off the plane, they took a taxi, and you know, if you live in this part of town, you're as close to the airport as there is any Jewish neighborhood. So they raced to my house in Kew Gardens, and 10 minutes before the Shkia, they knocked on the door. But there was no food for them yet to eat, because we hadn't prepared, you know, for a guest. So I quickly raced, threw some things onto the fire, then the pots that were on the fire, and by the time I'd come home from shul, there would be food for this person too. But we didn't anticipate. We can't always anticipate. So we do have to know the halacha. Sometimes we wind up in a situation that I have food which is not fully cooked on the blech as Shabbos begins. But then we have to have one firm policy. If I have a pot with food which is not fully cooked, don't touch it until you're ready to take it off the blech and just take it right off the blech. Don't move it. Don't touch it. But leave it alone. If you leave it alone, you can't get into it. Don't open it. Don't close it. Don't move it. Then you can't get into trouble. When you're ready to eat, take it off and put it down on a board off the fire and open it up, and what it is. Then you won't violate Bishul. So I said, we need to be prepared for the unusual happens. So this is half the story of the blech. Now let's go to the other half of the story of the blech. I mentioned to you at the beginning of the shir that generally speaking, we learn by experience. So what does that mean? That means, you know, every community has its learned people, its half-learned people, its unlettered people. So what we tend to do is we find out what the learned people do. And the things that they do, they're learned people, they know what they're supposed to do, and we do the same things. And that's how we stay out of trouble. The problem is that at times we don't fully appreciate that which we see, and we misconstrue that which we see. And we have, this is a theme in the halacha in many, many places. There are, as we know in the Chassidish community, there's a minhag not to eat gebrochs, right? That matzah products that shouldn't be put into a liquid on Pesach. This is, happens to be not only in the Chassidish community, the misnagdim eat gebrochs. There are Sephardic communities which also don't eat gebrochs. And what's the reason we find in the Sephardish Sfarim for this? There was a person. They were next door neighbors with the Talmud Chochem. And the Talmud Chochem's wife took matzah meal on Shabbos, on Pesach. And she made whatever she made with matzah meal. So the next door neighbor looked and said, well, listen, if she could do it, I could also do it. So her unlearned neighbor took flour and mixed it with water and used that on Pesach. You know, look, just the wife, the Chacham's wife is doing this. Can't be wrong. You know, I'm doing the same thing as the Chacham's wife. And she actually made chametz on Pesach. So in some Sephardic communities, because of this, they legislated against using gebrochs. This is a problem that we have, that people observe. We'll come back to this. I'll just give you an example of where else, but this is a very common theme in Chazal. Since we learn by observation we can easily misconstrue. You know, I don't go around every time I do something and hold up a big sign to explaining to the world what I do. You know, it doesn't come with life doesn't come with explanations. In actuality, as we're going to find out later on, if you lived in Phoenix, Arizona, so one of the members of the shul once did live in Phoenix, and they tell me in the summer months, you can get 120 degrees Shabbos morning is normal. Now, if you're the type that likes fresh eggs for breakfast, there's a way it's min haTorah, and then we'll come back to what's midrabanan true. But min haTorah, you can actually have fresh eggs on Shabbos, and 100% mutter weight. Take a frying pan. Right? My mother, Allah Shalom, had this like stainless steel frying pan, all stainless steel. The handles were stainless. Put that outside when you go to sleep Friday night. By the time you wake up at 7 in the morning, the sun's beating on it for 4 hours, just take a few pairs of gloves so you don't burn yourself picking it up. Crack an egg into it, and in 30 seconds you have a fresh egg, freshly cooked, and with the rice it's 100% mutter. 100% mutter. Yet Chazal legislated that in this particular way we should not do this. Why? Because when someone sees me cooking that egg, then they may not be sure how I heated that frying pan. Maybe I heated it over the fire. If I heated it over the fire, it doesn't look any different than if I heated it in the sun for the last 3 hours. If I heated it over the fire, then that's chilul Shabbos to cook the egg in that fashion. If I heated it over by the sun, it's mutter. And people would come to confuse the two. So Chazal said that I cannot use this method. But what I actually can do, I can take a plate, break an egg into it, and put it outside and leave it outside directly in the heat of the sun until it gets cooked. And that is 100% mutter to do on Shabbos. Allah holamais, it's mutter. Puff, puff. One second. Now, since we often learn by observation, we often mislearn by observation too. Now, Chazal did not want us or anyone observing us to think on Shabbos that we're allowed to cook on Shabbos. Now, not only do we leave food on the fire as Shabbos begins, that's one half of the story. Sometimes we take things off the blech and we take something out of the pot. And then we put them back on the blech on Shabbos too. The most things that we're most likely to take off are a kettle. But it could be other things too, that we want to use some of the food now and some of the food later. We take it off, we serve, we put it back. Now, what Chazal were concerned with is the following. How does a person observing me on Shabbos, how will he realize that you really can't take things out of the fridge and put them onto the fire on Shabbos and cook? I look like I'm cooking. I had a pot and I put it right onto the fire on Shabbos. So what will differentiate my activity on Shabbos from the activity which is usur of taking uncooked food and putting it onto the fire? How are we going to make that obvious? So Chazal legislated for this reason, this is a second use of the blech, that there should be five distinctions be about the fire on Shabbos, which allow us to put things back on the blech on Shabbos. And we'll see four of them really are all tied together to one theme. And one is for an outside reason. So we'll put them in this fashion. First of all, obviously, before we get to deal with the Issa D'Rabbanan, that I might mislead someone and cause them to think that you're allowed to cook on Shabbos, the first thing I have to make sure is that I don't actually cook on Shabbos. So if I took off food on Shabbos, and I discovered that it was not fully cooked, I would not be allowed to put it back on the blech. So requirement number one is to be certain that the food is fully cooked. If I'm taking it off the blech and I'm going to put it back. That's number one. Now, after that, we have four additional conditions. And we'll see all of these four conditions really tied together in one theme. we need to have, first of all, a blech. So the blech announces already that there's something special that's going on. This is not a regular story. Be on the alert. Something unusual is taking place. Number one. Number two, Chazal said that I have to still be holding the food in my hand, the pot of food in my hand. Didn't put it down. Number three, Chazal said that when I took it off the fire, I have to have the intention of putting it back on. And number four, right, we had the first condition that it has to be cooked already, and now I'm giving four additional conditions, a total of five. And the fifth one is that it should not have returned to room temperature. Now, if we observe these latter four conditions, again, that I still have it in my hand, I didn't put it down, I had intended to put it back, it's not back at room temperature, and there's a blech, all of them tie together in one thing. What they're telling me is, observe that this is merely a continuation of that which was here before. I'm not starting something new. This is a continuation of the old process. And that's how we, the blech distinguishes that if I come to take something out of the refrigerator on Shabbos, which is uncooked, that's very clearly distinct from the person that took off something on Shabbos and in this limited fashion put it back, because four out of five conditions all work together to underscore the fact that I can only continue that which was here before. I can't start anew. So this is the notion of the blech in this regard, that the blech is to remind us that when we're putting things back on the fire on Shabbos, it's because we're not doing bishul. We're merely putting something back on which was already cooked, and we're continuing the situation which took place in before now. But I cannot start from scratch. So this is the basic notion of the blech that we have on Shabbos for function number two. And that is to make sure that we underscore when we put things back on the fire that we're not violating bishul. That everyone realizes that. Now, from this standpoint, which is the standpoint that the Shulchan Aruch takes, it really is not particularly relevant, the issue of adjusting the flame. That's not the issue. There are those that ascribe that issue of adjusting the flame to this as well. But that's not the approach the Shulchan Aruch takes. The approach of the Shulchan Aruch is the approach of Rashi, that the problem on Shabbos is to make it clear that we can't cook from scratch. That's the function of the blech. That's the function of the blech on Shabbos. So we have now two functions for the blech. One is to remind us as Shabbos begins not to adjust the flame upward. And the second reminder, as Shabbos goes on, we should be reminded that we can't cook on Shabbos. Those two things. Now, yes. Make no difference as long as it's now. In the this as long as even according to Ashkenazic practice, as long as the food is still the liquid is still warm and it was once raised above what's called Yatzaledis, which we'll define later on, but it was raised above the level that's necessary to be considered cooked, then it's permissible. This is one of the differences. In the Sephardic tradition, if the food, the liquid, goes below what's called Yatzaledis, then you can recook it on Shabbos. So you have to be much more careful if you come from the Sephardic tradition than the Ashkenazic tradition in this halacha. So these are the two principal uses of the blech. Now again, yes?
Is there anything with the blech not supposed to be? I always thought the blech wasn't supposed to be so hot, but those Israeli blech that we have.
No, it's not a blech. Let's be very. Which Israeli blech you talk? You're talking a hot plate? What? I'm not talking about a plata. I'm talking about a blech. I am not talking about a plata yet. Okay, now, as I mentioned earlier, since the notion of the blech is to differentiate it from the way it's normally used during the week, if you took a hot plate, for example, and Israeli hot plates are very hot, and you didn't put an additional covering of aluminum foil on, you cannot take something off on Shabbos, even if it's fully cooked, and put it back. Because the purpose of the blech is to differentiate that which I'm doing on Shabbos from that which I do in the weekday. If it's the same use, the same manner of use on Shabbos as it is during the weekday, then halachically it doesn't meet the standard. So even if you have a hot now. So in terms of Friday night, if you have a hot plate, which is just an on and off hot plate, so really doesn't have problems for Friday night, you wouldn't need a blech. But to take things off on Shabbos and put them back, you do need a blech. So we're coming, because we're coming from two different angles, two different types of considerations here. Now, do we have any questions about that which we've done until now? Yeah. Go ahead.
When you say something is half cooked, is that by observing it and deciding that's halfway to that kind of meat, or is it like a time thing, like you would know it takes an hour for it to be fully cooked, so it's only a half cooked?
Well, I think you can the truth is probably both ways of estimating a farm, but just let me fill in because I want to be a little bit clearer. The Chazon Ish locked in on this point. If you cook something, let's say you boil something in a pot. So there are really two things. First thing that has to happen is the water has to boil. Until the water boils, it doesn't start to cook. So let's say it takes 25 minutes until the water boils. So after 25 minutes, nothing happened yet. So now we take half of the time from there on. So if it cooked and was on the flame for half the time, we assume that that suffices. Okay, but we have some margin for error, because for Shas HaChak, we're allowed, there are those that say it's one-third. So we don't have to be exactly precise, but we're approximating. Yeah? Listen, it does, because that's not the normal way to use a crock pot.
Not everyone heard the question.
The question is that many people line the crack pot with foil, and they leave the foil there at Bias HaGoyel, or until Pesach, whichever one comes first. So it's still not the normal way to use it. You wouldn't normally use a crack pot in that fashion. Yeah.
What about the crack pot that's not an insert? It just goes.
I understand if it's one piece crack pot.
It's a pot and it goes on like sort of like a hot tray.
Oh, so then it's simple. Then you just cover the hot tray with aluminum foil and have it stick out the sides, and that's it. You know, there's another type of hot plate of crock pot which is just one piece altogether. But I don't know if they're still, as I say, I don't own one like that in my house, and I don't know if they still make them. Yeah.
What happens if your crock pot is only used for Shabbos? So just its appearance in of itself on the counter.
That doesn't help, as I said. Chazal legislated. And as I say, you want to, you like my psychedelic bowl, I see.
What about when you say moving things around on the blech?
Yeah.
If you move, let's say, your hot water pot, your china, off the fire and you have your soup there.
Yeah.
And then you take up your soup Friday night and you want to shove your hot water.
So long as if you boiled it up before Shabbos, you have no problem. As long as it's still not back to room temperature. As long as it's still warm. Yes, you know. Yeah.
Can you put it down
someplace
and hold on?
If you need to, yes. You could, but you have to hold on to it. Yeah.
If something's fully cooked before Shabbos,
but not hot,
can you put it on the blech right before Shabbos?
Yes, you can put it on the blech right before Shabbos. Yes. Yes, that's something. You're allowed to put things, I told you. Cooking may take place on Shabbos. As I pointed out from Rav Henkin, it's not the wisest idea. But here you're not going to violate cooking no matter what you do, because it's cooked already. See, sometimes in the shiur you find out new things in mutter. Not everything's awesome.
When you mentioned your company that showed up 10 minutes before she came on, if you had had fully cooked food in the freezer, could you have taken it out and put it on the blech?
100%. No problem. I could have put any. You could put raw food. I could put fully cooked food. As long as I have a blech, I had a lot of freedom. Yes, as long as it's before Shabbos, no problem. Yeah.
Does fully cooked depend on objectively fully cooked or according to
me? Fully cooked, let me explain what fully cooked means. There are, the halacha differentiates between two different aspects of cooking. A cholent Friday night and a cholent Shabbos, after you come home from shul, and not the same cholent. right? Another 12 hours in the fire do something. But they may not do anything in terms of bishul. Bishul means if something is soft through and through. So if all the ingredients in your challah, the barley, the potatoes, the beans, whatever you put in, if they're soft through and through, that's fully cooked. The flavor may increase tremendously by keeping it on the fire. What? You know, there's an objective point that everyone agrees that it's what's underdone and what's fully baked. I don't think that, you know, if it's in a gray area, I can't tell you. Generally speaking, people know when something's underbaked and when it's fully baked. I don't think that's all that subjective. Yeah. I personally happened to be that I thought the Kedera Blech was okay. I was not one of the ones that was against it. Is it still on the market? I haven't seen it around.
I know people who have it.
Yeah, I know from the past. I know. I just don't see it. I haven't seen it around for years.
It is okay to you?
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah.
Well, you have the kind of a challenge that is the hot plate that's separate and gets put on, not inserted.
Yeah. Yes, you're going to have on the hot plate part, put aluminum foil before Shabbos.
And if you don't, then you can't take it off Friday night.
Correct. Now, what happens to be, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but you raised the question. I don't want to go into, when we discuss Bishul, we'll talk about this more. But there was a great Pesach in Egypt in the 15th century. His name was the Radvaz of David ibn Zimra. He was a giant of the halacha, and through most of history, if we look at all the published amount of tshuvas that exist, he probably has more than just about anyone else. He was a prolific author of tshuvas, and he had a very esteemed place in the history of the halacha. He discusses the following situation, and that is, he had a situation where there was no blech, let's say it was a hearth oven, so they really didn't have a blech in that situation, whatever the circumstances were. And the people ate in three different shifts. And the guys that ate at the end also wanted to have hot food. So he allowed them to dish out under those circumstances directly from the fire itself. So if you have a significant reason, you know, let's say you can't. For whatever reason, she doesn't have a blech or whatever, she won't be able to put it back. So now, normally, if it's, you have a pot of food that's on the fire, we'll see later, what you really need to do is to put it to a place on the blech which is not directly over the flame, and from there you can dish out. But that you should know. But we'll come back to that. I'm just getting ahead just because of the question that you raised. So now, what ought to have come about, and then that's, there's some question about this. Let's just deal with a couple of situations first. There's one of the classic situations, guaranteed to destroy the Shalom Bayis on Friday night. But so if what I tell you helps you, even once in your life, that you preserve the Shalom Bayis, as Shorim Mikol Amoli. I got a letter, which I have upstairs in the office, and as I shall before Pesach next year, I'll read it to you, where one idea that I put forth in the Pesach shir, a guy told me I prevented him from eating chametz on Pesach because of it. So this one, if I'll tell this to you, and if it prevents once that you don't, the Shalom Bayis is not destroyed, so this chorim mikol amoli. Friday night, you know, this usually happens when the balabusta, you know, is steps out of the kitchen for a second. You know, that's when all the trouble. Listen, the balabusta, how often does the balabusta use put milk and warm it up in a fleshiga pot? You know, there's just some things the balabusta doesn't do. When she leaves the kitchen, lets her kids in, her husband in the kitchen, who knows what happens, you know? That's when all the troubles begin. That's when the rabbis start getting telephone calls. So Friday night, someone goes, and they take a pot off the fire, which they believe has the chicken soup inside. And lo and behold, you open it up, and what's in there? It's the cholent. So now what do you do? Now, this is guaranteed going to blow out the Shalom Bayis. It's a tried and proven method. Now, assuming now, let's assume with one thing that the cholent is already fully cooked. You didn't put it up late, it's fully cooked already. So I was asked to shayla many, many years ago. And I have a whole complicated lomdish reason why it's mutter. To put it back onto the blech Friday night. Now remember, because he put it down, it's no longer in your hand, you didn't intend to put it back. So I had a whole complicated reason why I thought it's mutter. So some of my friends were telling me I was being too esoteric in my approach. But I happened to be, I liked the approach. So when I went with, later, I was with Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal, and I brought up the shayla with him. And as Rosh Hashiva told us, when you speak to Rabbi Yoshev, don't give him your ideas about the halacha. He knows only ideas that are necessary, you know. Listen well. So I told him the shayla, and he starts discussing it. So he started in right away with my esoteric approach. And he liked the esoteric approach. And he had only one minor issue with it. And that is, from his standpoint, he wasn't happy. For what reason? Because he said, what happens if a pot of food would fall off the fire by itself on Shabbos? Are you allowed to put it back or not? So there are some that hold it you're not allowed, and he was personally machma, like that sheet that you're not allowed. However, I knew that Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, and Rav Scheinberg, Zatzal, both of them opted for the other sheet, that of the sheetas that hold, that if it fell off by itself, you were allowed to put it back. And according to that, if you mistakenly took it off, you would be allowed to put it back onto the blech on Shabbos. That there is technically another reason. I asked Rabbi Yoshev for another reason, the other reason he consented with. So there were two separate reasons that if it was on the blech when Shabbos began and you took it off by mistake, and this is really important, it's not a peripheral item, it's like the cholent that you're allowed to put it back on again. Assuming that it's hot, it is fully cooked, that you're allowed to put it back onto the blech and now take off your chicken soup. So I told you one that's guaranteed that whenever it comes up, it's going to save the cholent bias, I promise you. So this is a very, very important, very, very important halacha to know. Now, we might think that once we put the blech on, that since this is differentiated from the way we normally cook during the week, that I could ought to be able to take things, dry things which have been cooked, and put them onto the blech on Shabbos. And theoretically, that would seem to be correct, that it ought to be true. But without getting into the technical reasons of why, but this was debated in the first half of the 20th century by the Gdolim of that time. And overwhelmingly, the consensus was that you're not allowed to do it. Or you can't take, if you have a kugel that was fully cooked and it was in the fridge overnight, you can't put it directly onto the blech on Shabbos. I mean, if someone does do it, I don't condemn them, because in fact there were great rabbonim that held that you are allowed to do it. It's not the consensus. Someone doesn't have the mesorah to do it should not be doing such things. So the Rashba came, and the Rashba told us the following. Now, what's our whole concern that we have, that we don't want to appear to be cooking on Shabbos? So the Rashba made a simple observation. If you have a pot of food and you don't put the food in the pot, but you put it on top of a pot which is already on the blech, so nobody cooks like that. So that's clearly so differentiated from the norm that you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. So here we come to a common practice, that if we have one pot of food and we want to put another pan of food on top of that pot to warm up on Shabbos, because assuming we're dealing with dry foods that are fully cooked, then it's 100% permissible to do so. This is not a violation of what we call chazora, putting things back on Shabbos inappropriately. Now, well, we have to keep a little bit our eye on the ball. The whole reason that this works is because it's not the conventional way of doing it. So if you had, for example, something like a double boiler, I don't think you're allowed to use on Shabbos, because that is the conventional way that you cook with this. So there's no differentiation on Shabbos for that which takes place during the week. That would not be permissible. Now, there emerged, there's a little bit of problem in the Shulchan Aruch, and what appears and superficially to be an inconsistency in the Shulchan Aruch. One of the great Pesach in the Prima Gaudim explained that it's not inconsistent, and he made the following step. He said, when is it permissible to put food on top of a pot? That's if the bottom pot has food in it. But if the bottom pot is empty, then there's no license to put things on top of it. That's the way he explained a certain apparent contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shaila arises. Nowadays, oftentimes, what we wish to do Shabbos morning is we take an empty frying pan, an empty tinfoil pan, or whatever, we turn it upside down on the blech, so it's elevated above, and then we put the rest of the food that we want to warm on top of that. So in light of this prima godim, is this permissible or not? So in fact, there are some contemporary rabbonim of notes who are against it, that say it's inconsistent with this prima godim, and they do not allow it. Others, including myself, do not agree with them. And we say that as long as there's a blech, and on top of the blech you're putting this upside-down empty pan, it's permissible. Because dayenu, it suffices that we don't put things onto the blech altogether. There are many rabbonim that held you're allowed. So certainly in that milieu, we don't have to be concerned to be that machmer that the bottom part also has to have food in it if we have a blech under it. So by and large, contemporary practice has allowed us that on top of the blech we put an upside down pan, Shabbos morning, and then we put whatever dry food we want on top of it to warm that food on Friday night. Okay, we'll take a few. No, we do not do such things. We don't put things directly onto the blech on Shabbos. You're talking usually by the time Shabbos morning comes, the gravy is dried already. Right. If it is small enough that when it liquefies or will be absorbed into the food that's there, there's no issue. We'll go into more the reasons for that in another part of the share. I don't have a share to it. I don't believe that there's a share. As long as it's not the way you would normally cook, that suffices. Yeah.
The recyclable pan that we're talking about inverting.
Yeah.
Does that have to be spotless, or can something like drip on it? Can you?
If it has a little bit of liquid, I just take a paper towel and wipe it dry, and that's it. You can even do that on Shabbos, and it's fine. Yeah, Marsha.
The inverted pans have to be there before Shabbos.
No, they do not have to be there before Shabbos. Yeah. I don't think it's a derech bishul. I don't think it's a problem. I'm not answering, but I don't want to answer yet. Normally, you should put it directly on the cover, not open.
Invert the cover on the top.
You can invert the cover and put it on top of the cover. Yes. I think the kedera blech is fine, personally. That's my personal view.
What about if you put food, let's say you have a crock pot with the chum, and you put something, is that considered like a blech or a pot? If you put something on top of the...
Well, you're allowed to put something. You don't need... It's clear, agave clean does not really need a blech in that regard. So that would be fine. Yeah, on the top is fine, yeah.
Is there a halakha on how hot you can have the food become on top?
No.
Can we come?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Not so much you said. Is there a difference between inverting the cover of your chowan pot and putting, let's say, it's dry in a kugel on that, as opposed to taking the cover off and putting it directly on?
I'm not sure. I don't want to answer. I'm not sure that you should do it without the cover on. I need to think that through.
But for sure, with an inverted
with cover, it's absolutely mutter. Yes, that's absolutely
mutter. You invert the cover before that.
What?
You have to invert.
No. No, no.
Is that an issue of covering something on top?
No, there's not. As long as it's fully cooked. There are those that, because of the fact, in the halachas of Bosor v'Cholov, the Gemara in Chulin says that storing something and covering something are equivalent to each other. So there are some that make that equation on Hilchos Shabbos. I do not believe the Chofetz Chaim made that equation, and I do not make that equation. So it makes no difference.
Sorry, so we can take the cover off a cleavishon while I'm cutting?
You can certainly take it off. You can even put it back. Yeah.
Let's say you have a
Yeah.
And you take something that's really high. You can put it straight out to the left, you don't have to put anything underneath.
You can take it. Well, you can listen. You should really take it out before the oven goes off. You know, in other words, if you planned to take it out before the oven went off, and then it went off unexpectedly, in other words, you didn't plan. So before it goes off, that's when you should move it to the blech. I mean, if it went off something by accident that you didn't anticipate, then you can move it. But here, if you closed it, in other words, so you yourself removed the fire from it by your action. Yeah.
But when I come home Friday night, then I realize, okay, I have enough food, I can serve it on the day.
I would not put it directly onto the blech in such a case. In other words, I would only reserve that for a situation either when it went off in some fashion that it did not anticipate, when I intended to take it off before and I just didn't get to it, or it went off for some reason in a fashion that I didn't, you know, anticipate. When I lived in Eretz Yisrael, a very nice apartment, but there was one strange thing in this apartment was that the stove was right next to the door to the porch. And one Friday night, as Murphy's Law has it, right after Shkia, the door popped open, a wind burst came and blew the flame out from under the food. The food was fully cooked. So I ran, and I had an upstairs neighbor here for a flight up that I knew even from America yet. We put the food onto that blech, and life went on. But, you know, you do have to be ready for the unexpected. Okay, we're going to hold it at this point. One more question.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself, but you talked about food being fully cooked for Shabbos. What about when you put food in an oven and people set a timer?
We'll talk about it. We'll get there. Okay? Be'ez Hashem, next week we will continue in the laws of cooking itself. I have no idea. I have to find out what the rules are. I can't answer you. Whatever the rules are.
Of law, regular law.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. But halachically, though.
As long as you fulfill the law. I don't know what the law is.
Okay.
You got to fulfill the law.
All right, thanks.
So all this stuff about Yatzel, we just go on the blech.
Listen, it's too hard to work with. In contemporary times, the blech is almost always going to be at some level Yatzel letters. It depends how good they conduct it. It's a very hard thing.
I mean, you put your hands on. You keep your hand there.
You know, if you have clearly such an area, there's no real.
Don't you have faith?
Not in my blood. I have a cup of left, that throws me forward.
And probably you don't even
have a flame on. Yeah, I don't even have a copper. It's copper. Yeah, no, the copper conducts the vocal tremendously. I kind of agree. Family has an area which is not yet to live with and allow for it. But you can't move it from that area to